Ashenden, written by Elizabeth Wilhide and read by Carol Boyd.
Chapter 1. The Cuckoo's Egg, 2010. Winter has been hard on the house, the bitter cold eating into the honey-coloured stonework, causing portions of the facade to crumble and flake away. Even in the external areas that are less exposed, under overhangs, for example, where the weeks of severe frost have been prevented from doing their worst, fresh staining has appeared in ugly blotches that bloom like malevolent flowers of decay. Ashenden Park, built towards the end of the 18th century and one of the finest late Palladian houses in the country, according to those who make it their business to judge such things, was once surrounded by thousands of acres. Over the years, the estate has shrunk to grounds of under a few hundred, which is nevertheless more than enough to provide an uninterrupted view from all sides. Look around. It is as if the house were an island domain in a sea of green. In front, land slopes away, then rises to a gentle hill, dotted with stands of trees and grazed by deer. Behind, terraces descend more abruptly to the river, the modern world nowhere in evidence. The principal block, like the two smaller pavilions that flank it, is crowned with a pediment on the main elevation. Its centrepiece and the focus of the symmetry of threes and fives and sevens is a recessed columned loggia that soars from the first floor to the roof. At the lower story, a continuous wall topped with a balustrade links the buildings together and makes elegant sense of it all. From a distance, as you come up the drive, for instance, the crisp lines of the architecture appear intact, and it is possible to appreciate the clarity of the design more than two centuries since it sprang from a drawing into life, from a mind into being. Look again. Up close, the deterioration is brutal and alarming. Stone teeth missing under the roofline, rotten sills, the dull blank eyes of windows. Another winter as severe as this, the rot will find its way indoors, and there will be serious trouble. Already the roof is leaking, and the background heat that has been maintained in the principal rooms is barely enough to ward off the damp. The house is much smaller than a palace, smaller too than many others of its type, yet much larger than most people today would recognize as a home. How many rooms? It depends on how you count them. About two dozen in the main block, give or take, not including hallways, landings, staircases, of which there are many. The side pavilions, once service quarters, are houses in themselves. Altogether, it is a mansion, perhaps, but here is a trick of the architecture, a mansion that feels both generous and human-scaled. Were you to see it from above, from the flight path to Heathrow, under which it lies, you might imagine yourself picking it up and placing it in the palm of your hand for safekeeping. The house contains time. Its walls hold stories, births and deaths, comings and goings, people and events passing through. Some of the occupants of the park, and not all its occupants have been owners, have treated it well. Others have been criminally careless. For now, however, it lies suspended in a kind of emptiness, as if it has fallen asleep or someone has put it under a spell. This silence won't last, can't last. Something will have to be done.